Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
What's good, internet? It is April 3rd, 2017. We made it to April.
We did it.
And we're coming to you live from Lobby One here in Vice HQ in Brooklyn, New York. Joining me, as always, Danielle Riendo.
Hi, how you doing today?
Patrick Klepek coming to us from the internet.
It's accurate. You nailed it.
The internet's own Patrick Klepek. Quoting the seat.
That's how I introduce myself.
Yes. Hi. I'm the internet's own Patrick Klepek. The internet owns me.
I-O-P-K.
The UPS guy really appreciates that. He thinks he loves it. Very funny.
He loves it so much. How's everybody doing today? This Monday morning.
Good. I had a lost cat this morning. I had to deal with a lost cat.
Tell me about the lost. Was it
I'm
your cat?
I'm cat sitting. My cats are never lost.
Did you say kids? My kids are never lost, but you meant your
kids.
Cats.
I think I admitted something right there.
I think
there.
You did.
I think the internet knows about my feelings about my cats now.
Did you lose someone else's cat
no,
this morning?
No, they were hiding extremely well. It required some extrication and some treats to get them out. I'm cat sitting right now for a good friend, and one of the cats is like really incredibly friendly. They're both friendly, but one of them's a little shy. You know, it required a little digging.
That's
happens.
Cats are very good at what they do.
Yeah.
They are very good at deceiving us.
That's true.
They sound like babies sometimes as a way of alluring us and making us love them.
Yeah, they're also really cute.
And despite knowing all of their tricks, I really love cats.
They're the best.
Patrick, how have you been?
Not pro-cat because they make me want to die, so...
That's unfortunate.
Not the
Why?
Cat's fault, but, sorry.
Allergies.
You make me want to literally just roll over and end it. So no cats. Get out of here, cats.
Oh.
What's the worst cat experience you ever had?
All of them. There's no pro cat experience when they make.
But like, is there a sliding scale from like?
No, every cat makes me feel awful. So all cats are unfortunately painted with the allergy brush, thus making you all terrible.
What about lions?
I haven't been around a lion. I don't think I'd get close enough to know if my allergies would be affected. So yeah, look, if cats want to be stuck behind a glass plating in which they are not allowed to interact with their allergens in my nose. Then fine. Cats are great. You can have all the cats you want if they're locked away in a room, incapable of interacting with me.
That's fair.
That's a choice. It's not a choice.
Allergies are not the choice. I did not come out of this world saying fuck cats. It was given to me.
I mean, it was nature's choice to fuck you over.
It's true. It's really unfortunate because cats are awesome.
Cats are great. Yeah. We shouldn't just, we should just take a pause. Let's get off of cats because we're just taunting Patrick.
I understand.
Oh, does that drawing of Patrick make you really sad? Like you as a cat? Because it's like, that could be me if only I could get close to cats.
Oh, no.
Instead, I just feel like that's how I feel when I have the cat allergies. Like I have just transformed into this cat creature because they're in me. I can feel the cat inside me, and it's a miserable experience.
That's Cat Austin.
The cat inside
Catston Walker.
Yeah, the cat inside me is my
like a self-help book. What is the
my best-selling young adult trilogy about my life with the cats?
Cats. Besides cats.
Fucking best.
What else is
Dogs
happening?
Dogs are also great. Yeah. My little dog is finally getting his necessary medication.
Oh, you
soon.
Know what? Being allergic to cats would make me feel way better about small dogs.
Sure. Because they're basically cats that are a little more excitable.
Cats can, they're self-sustaining. That's the advantage to cats.
Yeah,
dogs,
it's great.
Dogs
yeah.
will just die.
That's a good point, actually. Especially mine.
So for me, the divide had always been, if I want a dog, I want, a mid-sized dog or bigger. Like, the smallest dog I'll get ever in my life probably is like a Shiba Inu, which is a small dog, but has the weird proportions of a mid-sized dog.
It's a pretty medium, actually. Like, it has
like long legs, like comparatively.
Yeah, they're not tiny.
Right, and it has like the features of like a mid-size dog. A mid-size, you know, like a mid-size sedan.
Mid-size features, you know.
Yeah, just go down to the Honda and, you know, pick me up a mid-size dog.
Get a lab. Yeah,
we didn't get a Chihuahua. I have a Chihuahua Terrier mix. He's way bigger than a full Chihuahua. The reason we got that, even though he ended up being a little bit of a pain in the old buckaroo there, is that my girlfriend says that Chihuahuas have, and I quote, a rat face. And she wanted a dog that had a little bit more of a dog face.
I'll make sure and tell Pixel what your girlfriend said about her.
Wow. I hope, starting you know, beef.
Well, and every time, because there were several Chihuahuas, one was named Nacho, one was named Dorito at the shelter, and every time Drake, my dog, is a little jerk, we're always like, I wonder what life was like with Dorito. I wonder, what if we took Nacho?
Right, what
every
if?
Every time we're like that.
Your whole life would be different.
My whole
much
life
less
would
poop
be a
on
lot
the floor,
better.
I hope.
Hopefully. That's the other thing. Small dogs poop a little less than giant dogs.
Oh, see, that's an enormous part of it to me. I have friends with big dogs, and like you're basically just shoveling. Like I mean,
it's a shovel.
The amount of poop in your hands is just astronomical.
At least with a small dog, it's a small mess. Oh. Well, okay, it's not a small mess.
Not
actually.
When they poop on the treadmill.
Yeah,
like
he poops on the treadmill, and it goes flying across the room. It's really disgusting.
He's devious. He figured out a mechanism. He's like literally
devious
medieval.
Is correct.
Right. He, like, if there was an arbalist in your house, he would have learned how to load his poop onto it and shoot it.
Correct. Very correct. Yes.
Or trebuchet.
Everywhere.
Some other sort of siege engine. Poop is a big part of why.
He is the siege engine, to be honest with you.
Poop is a big part of why I don't like birds very much.
Yeah, they poop a lot.
They poop a lot. I just don't like birds. Like, there's a handful of birds that I like, but I don't get bird. People are allowed to have whatever pets they want.
Yeah.
I'm not here to judge you.
For sure.
I've just had bad experiences with birds and my ears because they're loud.
I understand.
Not
because
they pecked me in my ears.
I was like, did a bird eat your ear?
I am, however, playing as a bird species in Stellaris currently. Which is a game.
We're
talking about
game.
Video games and
a
this video game podcast. It's a space game. Stellaris Utopia, the new expansion for Stellaris, is coming this week along with a big patch that is, I think, really aiming to fix some really core problems with that game. A game I like a lot, but I kind of want to tell you guys a story about this.
Please
fucking,
do.
Do you want to set up what this game is? Too? It's sort of a sort of a niche game. So I just
it is an, it is absolutely a niche game. So Stellaris is by Paradox, which is famous for making grand strategy games. The biggest of which, the most successful of which, anyway, is Crusader Kings 2, which is a game about kind of like living as a member of a dynasty in the Middle Ages, going through like the early Renaissance. Basically. And their games are really interesting because compared to traditional strategy games, right? Like Civilization is a game about conquering the world. In general, conquering is still a thing that happens in these games, but it's totally easy to play a game of Crusader Kings or Hearts of Iron or Victoria or Europa Universalis, any of their games, and just like, oh, I'm gonna like, my thing is not conquering the world. My thing is like taking over Argentina.
Okay.
Or like, oh, my thing isn't
okay.
My thing isn't like trying to conquer Europe. It's getting Ireland unified as in the Kingdom of Ireland, and that's my focus. Or what happens in Crusader Kings 2 a lot is like, my goal isn't taking over all the Middle East, it's getting back that motherfucker who betrayed me, and I'm gonna spend 300 years of like feuding with his family and like setting up political marriages and blah blah blah. And Stellaris is them trying to move into the sci-fi space sector.
Which, as we've all established, a thing we all prefer.
Totally.
High fantasy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting for them because they do history games. And this is a game that is about space. But I also feel like it is a historical game in that it is interested in like the systems of history, the structures of history, the way in which forces, political forces, economic forces collide to make interesting things happen. Whereas a game like Masters of Orion, or there are lots of like 4X games, Galactic Civilizations, tend to be like they have those sorts of things like, oh, the economy is a thing. They tend to really just still be about exploring a universe and then conquering it, right? And there is still some of that here. I don't want to – this is the most like that one of their games is. But – what makes it really cool for me always is the weird political stuff mixed with the weird high, like hard science fiction stuff. This is the first time I've played it in probably 6 months. They've released two expansions, or they've released one full expansion called Leviathans, which is like a bunch of fiction stuff plus weird space monsters.
Good.
I happened to make a new species this time that ended up being their planet like two light jumps away was a thing that was slowly devouring a star. And I'm now like 12 hours into this save and I don't know what to do about that thing that's just eating a star nearby. Like, I just don't have the military force to go deal with it. I can't talk to it. It's called a stellar devourer. That sounds bad.
That's a great name though.
That's a great name.
I want to be reincarnated as a stellar devourer.
Yeah, totally. So let me just set up this thing that happened to me because I think it's really fucking cool. To me, this arc explains why I play these games in general. So I'm playing as this bird species called the Penthalon Coalition. You can make your own species in this game, your own cultures.
Did you name them?
The Penthalon Coalition.
Why? What would we explain?
It just sounded cool to me.
All right.
I probably hit random a bunch and then found some words I liked and like squished them and then changed them or whatever. I made them like 8 months ago and then jumped back in and was I'll start with these guys who I made forever ago. So whatever my brain space was, I don't remember.
I get you.
Right. Exactly. Right. So they're bird people who have like – when you make a species or a culture in this game, you give them different like traits, both like in terms of what their focuses are. So like you could be spiritualist or materialist in terms of like, are you studying science or do you have a religious focus? You could be pacifistic or militant, and you have like fanatic whatever versions versus regular whatever. And then they're also new to this mode, new to this update are civics, which are just like little extra not like things where it's like, not only do you like science, you really like robots. Not only are you an egalitarian, you're a beacon of hope for migrants. You're basically like a sanctuary society. And so I made these religious militant xenophiles who like other alien species.
Yeah.
They're a warrior culture. They're a tribal culture who have like this deep history of clans. And we got lucky and kind of started in a nice open space, kind of like not too many people around us, which gave us a lot of time to slowly grow. There's also a second species in my species. One of the other like little bonus civics I took was like, they don't call it an underclass, but there is a second species that I've given good rights to, but like are very clearly like set up to be the proles, right? Like, they're hard workers. They are not going to be put into like the technocratic roles. But in my society, I've given them lots of good positive things. Like, I'm not stepping on them. They're equal species.
Okay.
With different capabilities, but they're equal species in my society. And so because of that,
they're separate but equal.
I didn't say that. Sci-fi gets weird because when you have a species that's like, they're just smarter. Like, it ends up being kind of a fucked up analogy for the world, and it's where a lot of this falls apart.
I've never heard a longer pause from Austin Walker.
Mass Effect Andromeda does this super poorly in that the antagonists this time around are all about like genetic purity and like, they believe that the Asari have a higher capability for intelligence. Or the Salarians. They believe that the Salarians have a higher degree of intelligence. And then they're proven right. Like, that's also true in this game world. That's kind of like them, y'all fucked up. Whereas in Stellaris, no one says that it's wrong in the world to believe that those people are better at picking apples than being scientists. That's just a fact of this game world that's fucked up because sci-fi can be fucked up sometimes.
Right.
The point is, everyone has the same rights under the law. God damn it. That's
a step in the right direction.
Yes.
a step in the right direction. Austin Walker's Stellaris journey.
Well, okay, so one of the new things in this new Stellaris update is factions. One of the big problems with the early or with the original release was that in the middle of the game, all of your problems were external. It was just like, I'm running into factions that want to, or I'm running into other cultures that want to kill me, or like I'm struggling to have enough money or whatever. There was never any of that like beautiful, good political intrigue that came from most of Paradox's games. Like it was just like, they want to fight. It was never like, I'm crumbling from the inside because I can't keep people happy. Oh no, which is what those games do really well. So in this game, they added factions internally, or in this update, they kind of changed how factions internally work. So the first faction that started was a group called the Alien Justice Coalition.
Okay.
Good name. And they're all about like diversity. Like they wanted free migration and multiple species, and that all added up with what I had. And so like they were happy with me.
So the SJWs of the Stellaris universe.
Yes,
exactly. Very big into diversity. And the way that these factions work is they have like five or six things that they care about. And some of them are things where they're like, hey, just don't fuck around with that and we'll be cool. And other ones are like, hey, if you do this, I'll be really happy. And so they were really happy with me because I did a bunch of things that they liked. Then like, a couple decades into this game, the Patriotic Vanguard started.
Oh, no.
And that already sounds bad.
Oh, no.
But they weren't that bad at first because they were like this militant group. They were like hawks, but they didn't necessarily want me to go start wars. They just really didn't – they believed that like being solitary was strong, like we should stay inside of our own culture. And at that point, we were because it was just the early game and we just hadn't found that many other cultures. And they wanted to like keep war on the table. They wanted me to be like, oh yeah, there was a situation in which I would declare war, a war of aggression. They just didn't want me to move into a softer position. But at the beginning of the game, that was totally fine. And then a little bit further into the game, I found a group of like lizard people who lived on a tundra planet, and I lifted them up to space because I'm a bad, because I haven't watched Star Trek. Fuck it.
Violated that Prime Directive.
Of course. We don't have the Prime Directive. We're bird people. They don't have that.
Their prime director's
like, hey, you look cool. Come hang out with us.
All right.
I have this other tundra planet I can't colonize. You live on a tundra planet. Join my coalition and get on that planet. And so when I did that, there was a new group called the Free Elections Initiative that was all about how, like, when you bring in new people, don't, like, take away their right to vote. Like, make sure that they can be part of society in the same way. It's like, awesome. This is also good. And then some non-political stuff happened that then wrapped back into the political stuff. So while all this is happening on the politics stuff, I'm sending science ships out through space. And I'm finding other cultures, and there have been, like, some light skirmishes and stuff. But I have one way far away, like, in a place that, like, doesn't even matter to me. Like, there are 12 different cultures over there, but I'll never interact with them in a one-on-one thing because they're so far away. And the science ship, which is called the Scream, all of my science ships were named things that birds do, like scream or dive or sweep. Or soar, right?
Do you
I didn't name them. This is all.
You have a caw?
I don't have a caw yet.
All right.
And all of my science, all of like my named characters are things like plume of Viridian or whatever, beak of Vermilion, whatever.
I
only know V colors also.
Sure.
And so the Scream is up in this like weird galactic arm that I have not really been to at all. And then this thing happens where it's in like a galactic node. There are a bunch of ways you can travel through space in this game. You could do like just go from whatever planet to whatever planet slowly. You can do wormhole stuff. But my culture uses like hyperlanes. So the whole galactic network is like there's little highways. You can jump from one planet to the other. I don't have access to the other ones, which means that this thing happens where my science ship gets caught on a node between two warring cultures.
Uh-oh.
And then both of them shut down their borders. So it's just stuck here for a while. And also that node is a black hole. and so it's just orbiting this black hole, and it notices that there is something there that it can study. But no one on the ship, my science officer, isn't high enough level to study it successfully.
Oh.
So I'm just like, you're just stuck there, pal. And I'm like, no, I – fuck. And I spend like 3 in-game years slowly repairing my relationship with one of the two warring factions so that ship can get out of that little node and go level up somewhere else. And it does that. I give them a bunch of gifts and like, hey, open your borders to me. Like, we're cool. We're never going to fight. I'm never going to see you again. Please just let my science ship away from this fucking black hole. And it goes out and levels up, and I bring it back so that it can scan this black hole. And then I get an event, because this game also has lots of events. And the event, I'm just going to read, this is the first event from this long chain, and it's called The Horizon Signal, Gravity is Desire.
Oh, boy.
And it says, Science Officer Wings of Ivory, see, Science Officer Wings of Ivory reports that the signal was unexpectedly easy to decipher, but that their team has spent considerable time confirming that it is not a hoax. It is a repeating, half-coherent message in the Penthalin language, something like a poem. It repeats the phrases gravity is desire and time is sight. It encodes coordinates near the black hole, and it ends with a dedication by name to the science officer, who adds dispassionately that they have confirmed that the signal has been radiating into interstellar space since before their birth.
What?
In fact, the signal may predate our civilization. And that sets off this huge long chain of events with like lots of decision making and stuff, which is really cool, and lots of like role play, like, oh, do we want to lean into the religious side of our culture where we're like studying this and worshiping it, or do we want to lean into the military side of our culture where we're like, nah, send in a ship with a bomb in it, please. there's a section in it where they're like, this guy shouted out the worm, and then in parentheses it says, or maybe it was the worm where the W is capitalized, which is a really good joke.
That's amazing.
And then all of this collides because at the end of this set of quests and stuff, there's a section where a growing cult that worships like a time paradox came into power and released a retrovirus that turned my people into a previous evolutionary state of them. The leader of my culture was like, yeah, give me one of those, because he was completely bought in. And then seconds after the leader of our culture was like, yeah, time paradox cult, awesome, a group of citizens formed a fourth party called the Financial Stability Board, which are neoconservative Republicans.
Oh, God.
They were like, no, 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 no. Hey, slow the fuck down. Status quo. We need to defend the status quo immediately. There's too much happening. No, we have to get it back on to just economics. Austerity time, y'all.
Kind of seems like they maybe have a point this time, though.
So what's amazing, though, so they had an incredible attraction rate. And so it went from being like, this game works in a thing called population units, because like that's how these sorts of games work, right? And so I had like 60 population units spread out across all these different planets. And before this thing existed, it was pretty evenly split with a serious tilt towards the group that was all about justice, like our SJW
Space
like,
Justice party. Warriors.
Space Justice Warriors, yes. The SJWs, were just crushing it. We were just crushing it. And then the Space Republicans showed up, and literally 30 of my population units went right to them immediately.
Wow.
Because it has a thing called the attraction mechanic that's like, oh, hey, right now, that's really attractive.
This is the thing we need right now, kind of thing.
So,
okay.
At that point, I'm like, fuck off, Financial Stability Board. Like, give me back my people. Like, and I start trying to, like, subvert them and, like, run propaganda against them. And they want me to do stuff that's, like, some of the stuff is, like, easy enough to keep them happy. Like, get a bunch of money. Like, they just want us to have a good reserve of money at all times so that we're safe. But other things that they want are, like, stop trading with people who we're, like, questionable about. Like, shut down your borders. Be clean. Like, be pure. Don't let in any other. And I'm like, fuck y'all.
Yeah. No.
And then things got even more complicated.
Oh, no.
Which is I decided the way to get stability that I was comfortable with was to form a federation, because I have seen Star Trek.
Right.
I have played Mass Effects 1 through 3. Okay. I understand that the way towards success in the universe is stronger together. You diversity of a bunch of different cultures, not just a bunch of different species, people of different beliefs.
I just want to point out that Stronger Together was the branding of Hillary Clinton's failed 2016 campaign, so I'm feeling very nervous about what you're about to embark upon, Austin. I don't know where this story goes. I just want to say I'm nervous.
We're taking the high road, as in space. That's how high our high road is. That's where Hillary went wrong. She said we take the high road.
She should have been a space queen.
She should have gone to space, where they're at the highest road that there is.
That's right.
So
please continue, Governor.
the thing is that to start a federation, you have to make friends with people. And so to make friends with people, you have to sometimes change your internal policies. So I really wanted Earth. The Earth was just – I found the Earth at one point, and the UN was there. The United Nations of Earth were there. And I was like, oh, yeah, we should be buds. Like, y'all seem pretty okay. And to make friends with them, I needed to be friends with another group. And to make friends with that other group, I had to say, no more wars of aggression. I'm just going to do defensive wars from now on. And when I did that, the fucking patriotic vanguard lit up. And then they really lit up when I started the Federation, because the two things they care about is let us fight whoever the fuck we want to fight, and also no federations.
Yeah.
Right, they're xenophobic. They're just like, don't ever work with another group. And so suddenly their happiness goes from like 50% to 2%.
Oh, boy.
And they're not that many people. They're like 10% of my population. But when 10% of your population is at 2% happiness, everything grinds to a halt.
Woof.
That's just like, oh, yeah, we're not going to work in the electric factories anymore. You're not going to have any power. Sorry, bud. And like suddenly I'm in this weird position, which is I can keep the neocons happy. I can keep the Financial Stability Board happy. I just have to have a lot of money. They're totally into having a federation because it's stable. And I have to make the decision of like, oh, I'm going to make friends with like the traditional moderate Republicans over these extreme right-wing war hawks. And like that's when I know it's a good game. When the weird time-space cult has somehow caused a chain of events that's made me like go across the aisle and be like, you're more of a Mark Rubio. I can live
with
you.
Find the three moderates.
Right? That's
the
thing. Yep. And that's what makes these games really cool to me.
Oh, my God.
Like, because I had the whole arc of hating them when they started to, like, you're a necessary evil that will keep things stable. I'm going to push towards you, and then we'll deal with you later. But for now, you're a little more stable. I really like Stellaris. A lot of the stuff has been really cool for me to come back to, because I liked that game when it launched, but it was really missing the stuff that I'm describing now when it comes to, like, internal conflict. So I'm going to stick with that, and it's giving me, like, the sci-fi fix I wanted from Mass Effect.
Yeah.
The story you just told, how long is that in what you played?
A 3-hour segment, right? Or 4 hours. Like, all said, it was probably 12 hours, like, from birth to this moment.
Right.
But the heart of it, which was, like, I have three of the four factions formed, and then I find this weird cult or I find this weird time-space anomaly in a black hole to the end of that is like 3 hours of play.
Okay.
But that's like a lot of time. That's a lot of time, but like the thing that's cool about these games for me is there's lots of fiddly stuff to worry about where it's like, oh, I'm going to move my populations around and make sure that I'm getting the most efficient production. I'm going to make a new sector because I'm only allowed to personally control three or four planets. I'll let the AI handle these other three. But all in the back of my mind is just like, what the fuck is happening with that space worm? What is that space worm? And that's the thing that works really well is it gives you that flavorful background while you're doing the minutiae of like running a space empire. So I'm excited to put some more time into that.
God, I want to play this.
Yeah, we need to.
I mean, as a The Expanse fangirl, this sounds like it's right up my alley.
We need to do a stream of like you, me, and Rob playing that game. I kind of hinted at that in my game of the year list. Was like, hey, I really like Solaris. I'm going to like it a lot more once they fix this mid-game stuff, and I'll do a stream of it. So we should definitely this week or next week show you some of that stuff because it's really
amazing.
Fucking cool. That game's out this week. Like I think the April 6th, the expansion to it.
Awesome.
So there's all this other stuff that I'm not even going to get into, but I just wanted to like – that's the heart of why I play games like this that are really – convoluted is sometimes that can build up to be this really interesting flashpoint. So also it's the only time I like birds is when they get to be
that's fair.
Astronauts.
When they're in space. Yeah, space birds.
That's when birds
how do you
belong.
Convince someone to convert to birdism? You make them play Solaris as a bird race.
That's it. That's
you
exactly
wanna
it.
Make you want a birdism.
Make exactly. You know? how does anybody else have any really amazing game experiences this weekend?
I mostly avoided games over this weekend because I was out of town, but I have been slowly plucking away at this VR horror game that's been in development for a couple of years called Narcosis. It came out last week. The premise is that you're part of a sort of underwater facility, you know, with a whole group of people, and there's some sort of seismic event, like an earthquake that essentially like disconnects you from all the creature comforts and the nicely locked facility where you can go get dry, and instead you're tucked into your spacesuit, walking along the seafloor and like trudging through different dismantled parts of your facility and trying to avoid what I can only describe as sea spiders. They're
I'm good.
Terrifying. I went through a sequence this morning in which I had to make my way through a sea spider like cove. There were dozens
awesome.
Of them. They're enormous.
Nah.
If you misstep, they shove one of their arms into your suit, and then you die. They make a clicking noise behind you even as you're walking away, and you can only move very slowly, and so you're just hoping they're not tracking you, and I refuse to look behind me while I'm walking.
If you're going to die in the ocean, let it be from behind. Like, let it just – whatever is back there, just kill me. I don't want to see your face. What are you, a shark? Are you like a big sea eel? What are you?
Giant sea monster.
A turtle?
Yeah.
I know turtles are
turtles
cute.
Eat people?
Listen.
I bet a turtle could eat a person if it wanted to.
A turtle could eat a person.
We've made it this far because the turtles have chosen to not eat us.
Right.
If we gave them an incentive, the turtles could turn.
If you treated a turtle – I've seen Ninja Turtles.
Yep. I have too.
I've seen – other things with turtles in them.
Right.
I've been to a zoo.
It's just that Crush is so nice, you know, from Finding Nemo.
I haven't
such
seen
a nice
Finding
dude.
Nemo.
Oh, he's like the surfer dude turtle.
Okay.
You know, he's so nice.
You can't judge a whole culture based on one person.
I know. I'm pretty sure there's turtles
in
The Little Mermaid.
I've judged the sea spiders, though. Fuck the sea spiders.
Yeah, you did judge them.
I'm sure you're given, like, I'm sure there's a better name. You're a crab something, but they're sea spiders.
Yeah.
And they're bullshit, and I want nothing to do with them.
Are they crabs? Are you the thing you're... Are they sea spiders or is
crabs
it...
Crabs or spiders? Huh?
The thing you're describing, is it just
there
a crab?
They're
Austin, they are enormous. They are like the size of an elephant. They are giant, and they look like Daddy Long Legs, and they put their thing, and they click, and they make noises. They're sea spiders.
But if it's a big crab, that could be delicious.
I don't want to eat this sea spider crab. I don't. It wants to eat me.
That's all the more reason. You got to eat it first.
Circle of life, man.
And the game itself is a little rough around the edges, but like its heart is in the right place. And like VR also allows games that don't have the fidelity you would like. This game would be a little rougher if you were just playing it on a big television screen, distanced from what you're doing. But what VR allows allows for is that, like, lower fidelity art and technical expertise can be mitigated by the fact that, like, if it's something atmospheric, being part of a VR can really enhance that experience. And
right.
I don't have many, like, true – I don't even sure if I call it a phobia, but, like, claustrophobia, like, is something I deeply sympathize with. Like, the idea of being like, locked into something, like, being buried alive is, like, a top –
it's terrifying.
It's
sort of
bad.
Ways to die for me, like being like the that Ryan Reynolds movie from like 5 or 6 years ago where he
yes
was yeah
in Iraq,
buried.
I think, and then he gets locked into a coffin for like a better
isn't
part
it
of
called
a
buried?
Weeks.
I was thinking of a different thing, but go ahead, keep talking.
Isn't it? Wasn't that Ryan Reynolds? Was that Ryan Reynolds?
That might be right. I'm thinking of a completely different thing that might not have Ryan Reynolds in it.
I thought it was.
I'm googling
buried.
As well.
I thought it was Ryan
yeah.
Reynolds.
You're almost
buried.
Certainly right. I was thinking about.
It is Ryan Reynolds.
I was thinking about Mr. Brooks, which has Dane Cook in it, who I
oh,
who I often
wow.
who those two guys.
Uh-huh.
I feel like there's a path divided with them.
Sure.
And either of them could have wound up as the other one. And Ryan Reynolds
I see
chose
where you're going.
Ryan Reynolds chose right.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I see where
Dane
you're going.
Cook gets buried alive in Mr. Brooks, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. So it's like Barry that movie with Ryan Reynolds isn't a particularly good movie, but the conceit unnerves me to such a degree, and that's what has made Narcosis like so like it's there's a line in the game where the character talks about like their situation is so hopeless that the easy way out would be killing themselves, but the suit that he is in is built to prevent fear from overwhelming you and allowing you to easily kill yourself. So
quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The situation that he's in, like, wow. the suit he has is meant to stop him from, like...
That's brutal.
Like, doing the thing that was easiest to just get out of the situation and, like, you know, you can't just, like, create a pocket of air and, like, just slowly
right.
die in the water. Like, all these sort of things prevent it from doing that to try and encourage you to overcome your fear and try and make it out the other side. So it's profoundly uncomfortable. I can only play it for, like, 20
really
minutes
good.
At a time because it just kind of gets under my nerves, and I'm hoping to write about it early this week. I think I'm in the back half of it. But if you have access to a VR headset, it is worth checking out.
Is that PC only?
It's on PC. It might be on Xbox. I don't know. It's not on PS4. Let me...
Okay. But Xbox, so far, does not have a headset.
No. That,
yeah,
that's,
not yet.
Yeah, that will...
Those rumors are getting out there bit by bit.
That'll,
I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see some
yeah.
on that stuff soon.
Yeah, let's see, give it 12
is
months.
My, I think less.
Yeah, right.
I think
it's,
less.
It's on Oculus, and it's coming to Xbox in mid-April. I'm sure it's probably still interesting without a VR headset, but it's if you can go play it on...
A
Vive or an Oculus, I would recommend going down that path.
Totally.
Or not. It's awful. I don't feel good, so maybe don't go down that path.
When I said totally, what I meant was no, I'm good.
So you're both not into spiders.
No.
I'm not into spiders. I
no.
have tried my best to become an adult about spiders. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
I feel that way about roaches, but it's less fear
yeah.
and more utter disgust.
They're very gross.
I am
spiders.
Disgusted by
spiders.
Roaches.
Could burn. I don't care what they contribute to the world on an intellectual level.
Okay.
Burn them.
Gotcha.
Too many eyes.
There's a lot of
you
eyes.
You don't need that many eyes.
I once lost a black widow in a room, and it was the most scared I've ever been in my life. I was like, I've never been more scared. It was in California where there are black widows.
Oh, God.
I was at Cal Arts. It was in a dorm room. And it just, like, I saw it. I was like, oh, shit. And then it, like, I was like, I have to go get something to get it. And when I grabbed something to go kill it, by the time it got back, it crawled behind the headdress of my bed. I was like, oh, it's just back there. It's, like, 3 a.m. I have to go to bed soon. What do I do? It was a long night.
What did you do?
I stayed up all night.
You burned the building.
Right.
Yeah,
right?
Pretty
this
much.
This is the only way to be sure.
I eventually killed a spider. But when you, like, step on a spider and it's all gross and gooey, I don't know if it was the spider.
Yep.
Oh, God.
And so the next week was just miserable. The next week was me just be like, there was definitely by day three, I was like, all right, well, if I gotta go, I mean,
God,
this is it. I guess I might just get bit by, and like, I had to sleep in that bed. Like, I had to.
God.
I saw like three Black Widows that year. One of them was just in the bar that was like, we went to a dive bar that was like down the road from where the campus was. And it was like great because it was like a local dive.
Yeah.
And it was like the opposite of being at CalArts. It was just like
lots
of like local townies who were like 42-year-old dudes who were just like beer gut playing darts, singing karaoke. It was the best.
Sounds
it was like
awesome.
So good. And their buddy,
Black Widow Spider.
And their buddy out back in the little like patio area, the Black Widow Spider, who they were all just fucking cool with. I was like, hey, there's a...
You know, you could die.
There's a Black Widow back there. Like, yeah, well. Like, no.
Leave Fred alone.
Right.
Fred has a beer every now and then.
Roaches are super gross, but I'm not going to like get bit by one and killed by it.
Right.
Right? That's not a thing?
I don't think so.
It's also specifically tarantulas that I have a problem with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
See, those are the one spiders that I'm like, okay with.
Oh, my God. Get...
They're fuzzy.
Furry.
Is it the fuzziness?
They're fuzzy.
Everything about... It's the slow...
Oh, that I like. That's like the opposite. We have opposite spider syndrome.
Yeah,
we have OSS.
We need to move on from this conversation.
Because like mine
OSS.
Are, this is the thing, is like mine are things like Black Widows, which are big, spindly, black, oily, like crooked.
And it'll kill you.
But like it's just the aesthetic of it is whatever. My brain has been trained
to
metal,
like,
ugh.
To be honest. Yeah.
If
versus
I was,
the more like fuzzy, furry.
Right.
Know.
If I lived in the world of Brutal Legend, I would want to be on the side of a Black Widow spider.
You
want to
ride it into battle.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. I
want to
tame them.
Yeah.
That's not, but that's not real world. In the real world, it will just show up, bite me, and then I'll die. Yeah. And people are like, I'm Black Widow.
I mean, you probably won't if you're actually near a hospital, but it's still.
But what if I don't know? That's the thing.
Right.
What if I'm asleep and it bites me? You're done.
Hopefully it hurts enough that you wake up. I'm saying hopefully.
Yeah,
you know, I don't like this scenario either.
It's a bad one.
To be
it's
honest
scary.
With you. Brown recluse spiders are also terrifying.
They're also terrifying. I haven't ever seen one of those.
Those are more East Coast than West Coast.
I know.
Yeah.
Don't remind me.
I'm sorry.
God. I'm going to dip into the question bucket,
Let's
I think.
Do it.
If
Please.
You have questions, you can send them to gamingadvice.com. Use the subject line question and then maybe a little bit about your question if you want also. We're going to dip into the top of the bucket today. This one I think has been something that's on my mind a lot. Lately, this is from Andy, who says, in recent years, there are a number of games that have received generally positive coverage from the press on release, but the conversation about them now is that they are bad games. I'm thinking of Final Fantasy XIII, Dragon Age Inquisition, and Skyward Sword, among others. Why do we have this backlash? Those games were all flawed, but the latter two in particular received Game of the Year awards from various publications not so long ago.
Yeah, Polygon gave Inquisition.
Totally.
The Game of the Year.
But now there is definitely a larger community that I think maybe does not have the fondness for that game.
Sure.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, probably the game that had like the strongest critical whiplash was BioShock Infinite.
Definitely.
Of a game in recent memory that went from like I'm not saying there wasn't critical analysis of the game when it first came out, but like by and large
totally.
It was Ken Levine's done it again. And then people
10 out of 10 scores
place. But like the whiplash on that was very quick. Like, whereas I think with games maybe like Dragon Age Inquisition or stuff like that, that's like a curve that took a little bit longer that I think has more to do with like, you know, people really letting a game sink in. Like there is just fundamentally something that often can't happen with your experience with a game right up front that isn't necessarily endemic just to people who review games for a living, but is just part of the first wave of experiencing something.
Right.
And that you can't really give it that critical eye until later and you let it sink in and you have perspective from it. Because, you know, a lot of times you can experience something and love it because maybe you're just a big fan of that franchise and that style of combat. And then, you know, like I liked Gears of War 4 a lot playing it. And then like 3 weeks later was like, wow, I really actually don't think I enjoyed that game very much. But in the middle of it, like the mechanics of the game took over and I was enjoying it. But it's just like the lingering effects of it was not something that I could really conceive until I had distance from it and was able to look back and go, oh, maybe I didn't feel as great about that as I did. But there was no way to write about that at the time, right? Like, you can't put a caveat in a review that, like, actually, I might change my feelings on this in 6 weeks. I guess I'll just rewrite it. You know, that's just the nature of writing something down, is it's a moment in time and a feeling in time, and that feeling might change later. Maybe you read an article that, like, or have a discussion that totally changes your feeling. Like, I played Bioshock Infinite and thought it was, you know, fine enough. Like, it wasn't, didn't pay close attention to sort of the racial politics because I was focused on the sci-fi story, and I ended up disappointed by the sci-fi story part of it, but then became more, like, my feelings on the game became, you know, more complicated as people were pointing out the racial politics that I just wasn't paying close attention to. And that's, like, I can see myself writing a review of that game. I didn't review that game, but I could have seen myself writing a review that was like, oh, like, it was pretty fun, and, like, the ending was sort of
four
a disappointment.
Out of five.
But, like, you know, it was a fun sci-fi romp, blah, 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 blah. But then once all that stuff was pointed out, like, oh, shit, this is a lot uglier than I saw on first pass.
Right.
Yeah.
It missed the mark in ways that it thought it was hitting the mark.
Yes.
And that can be tough.
Yeah.
I think that the other thing here with Backlash just the separation between review experience.
The full arc of critical reception.
Right.
Perhaps.
So one thing that's interesting, I think, with Bioshock Infinite was, one, I think we are a little more attuned to what that backlash was because we run in those circles.
Right.
Yeah.
To the point that when Infinite HD or whatever, not HD remake because it was already HD, but its most recent remaster that came out last year at the Bioshock Collection, there were lots of people surprised that there had been any negative thoughts about it. Like when media wrote critical things about the remaster, we're like, well, it is, you know, doesn't fix its weird racial politics. A lot of comments were like, why didn't the this is like, you didn't hate
first
this 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. 4 years ago, everyone loved this game. Where's all this criticism coming from? Because, like, oh, well, yeah, you're not tuned into that same thing. A lot of writers happen to be tuned into those places, have heard it, have internalized those critiques, and that backlash has slowly happened in, like, this group of people. I don't know. I'm curious what the wide audience thinks of Bioshock Infinite in the grand scheme of things. I wonder if folks still, like, really do hold that game up. I don't know.
That's a good
question. The other thing that happens is the other thing, which is, like, big backlash against a game backlash against the criticism of the game, where, like, reviews poorly, sixes and sevens, and then the audience fucking eats it up anyway.
Yeah.
And that's always interesting to see, too. Like, it's always
game that had something that was that.
I had thought Mass Effect Andromeda might find that. I think its core audience will still defend that game to its death, but
like
I don't
Spec
know.
Ops the Line, like, or the something like
even
that.
Even the reviews of Andromeda, like, are more like middling, slightly above. Like, it's not like it cratered with critics.
No,
and then
totally.
Fans are on the other end of that. I'm trying to pay attention to chat if they can think of some.
Yeah, if they can think of anything that does that way. I feel like there's sometimes it's just like a fan
God
community
hand.
Thing.
Somebody's saying
God Hand, but that's like a cult classic
that's
in a
true.
Sense, right?
I think that's more likely with
Demon
that
Souls
sort of thing.
Is a
Demon
good.
Souls.
Demon
yes.
Souls actually
that's
maybe
a great
prototypical
yes.
example of this, in which GameSpot was an outlier, gave that game Game of the Year upon its the year of its release.
Wow, like, did they?
Yeah, they were one of the
good on them.
Well, Greg Kasabian Shocking. Is like a Demon Souls acolyte, and clearly a lot of people had to like it for it to get Game of the Year there, but they were. They were clearly ahead of the curve on recognizing what that game was doing as opposed to how that game was largely interpreted, was that the way it ran against the grain just surprised people in a way that, like, at that point in time, games were a lot more hand-holdy and set-piece-driven. And now that Demon's Souls didn't have some of that stuff, but it was purposely designed to cut against that. That surprised a lot of people. Also, it's the kind of game that if you weren't prepared for what it was, as a reviewer, I can see how you would fucking hate it. Because if you weren't knowing what you were going in for, I could see how that would just sort of bother you on a fundamental level in terms of how you have to review games.
Totally.
But that's the game I can think of in the last, like, 10 years that it's like a game that didn't review very well, became cult status, and now canonically the Souls games are viewed very differently than how Demon's Souls was originally portrayed.
Right.
I'm saying Destiny.
Yeah.
But that, again, is more middling.
Well, like, the fans all the people who I know who loved that game at launch also hated that game at launch.
Sure.
I think Kirk Hamilton's review of that game for Kotaku is, like, one of my favorite pieces of, like, traditional games criticism, like, review. And it really nails this line of, like, I can't stop playing this game, and also here's everything wrong with it.
Sure.
I think the one of the things that someone picked up on, which is really good, are, like, crafting games right now.
Yeah.
That, like, 90% of the people I know in the games press don't give the time of day to games like Rust or Ark.
Sure.
And those games have massive communities of diehard fans.
Yeah.
And that's not like backlash to the backlash or whatever, but like I think that's a similar disconnect between audience and reviewer, you know?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's also something to Skyward Sword and Dragon Age Inquisition in particular, which is that they're both really massive games that are overstuffed with bullshit, but also have really high highs. And I think that's got to be part of it as well. You know, when you're reviewing a game, the stuff that sticks out to you is the stuff you're actually going to write about. So I'm going to remember the amazing dungeons in Skyward Sword.
I'm not going to remember being stuck in the hinterlands for 25 hours.
Exactly.
Because I had to get through it, because I'm a reviewer.
I'm
going to get through it. Yeah. Whereas if you're at home playing and you're at hour 22 of the hinterlands thinking this is what I should be doing, then you're just going to have a miserable time.
Yeah.
It's difficult. I think Dragon Age 2 is an interesting example, too, which I'm still plucking away at this thing. It's the second time someone said plucking away. We were talking about birds.
Oh, so many birds.
Sorry, birds. At this Mass Effect thing I'm trying to write, in which one of the things I bring to mind is Dragon Age 2, which on launch received really poor reviews, or pretty poor reviews specifically for it's being so repetitive, reusing a lot of dungeon assets, the combat feeling dumbed down. A lot of fans didn't like it at first for that reason, or a lot of very vocal fans did.
Right.
It didn't. But then bit by bit, it grew its own fan community. The people who subdivided from Dragon Age Origin fans who like liked something different and wanted something different from BioWare games stuck around that game and buffeted it. And then eventually I played it, and because I had my expectations reset, I was good, right? And the same thing happened with Destiny, actually, which was like I played Destiny after House of Wolves and whatever the other first early, Dark Below, before Taken King, and I knew what I was getting into. I knew what it was, and I had a pretty good time with it because of that.
Yeah.
And I think that that's another thing that can come up in this conversation is, like, once that first initial wave of what is this thing, how is it, once that goes out, like, that can shift your expectations, and shifted expectations change the literal experience of what you have with a thing. Like, that's not a dirty secret, or that shouldn't be a negative. Like, we should embrace the fact that having our expectations change changes what our experiences is with something. So, I don't know. It's useful to have that stuff in mind. Maybe one more quick one here,
and then
we'll wrap up here. This one starts, "Hey, Waypointers, apologies in advance. This is a lot to chew," which maybe is not. Maybe that's not a quick one. We'll wrap back around to that
one.
How about this one here? This is actually – this one I'm really curious about your take, Danielle. This comes in from Evan, who says, "Hey, Waypoint, I'm a high school English teacher, and I'm always trying to lend credence to more contemporary forms of art and writing. Yes, we still do the traditional Shakespeare, but slowly our literary canon has expanded. It's not just dead white guys, and I want my curriculum to reflect that. I have my students read as many perspectives as possible, diverse in terms of race, gender, sexuality, and religion. Moreover, I want them to read and analyze other mediums. I want them to take TV, movies, or rap seriously as pieces of writing. The big question is, how do I incorporate video games into the classroom in the same way? It's way easier to send home a textbook. Alas, I can't send home PS4s and a copy of Horizon. Not to mention time commitments. What does this look like in a classroom? Does it belong? Do I focus more on larger game design? If so, I need your help, Danielle. What else could they analyze besides your oft-quoted player experience goals? Or do I focus more on traditional writing such as themes, symbols, or characterizations? Love your podcast and unique articles. Thanks for bringing an interesting voice to video games journalism. Thanks, Evan." Thank you, Evan.
Thank you, Evan.
Danielle.
I got a whole syllabus of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
So the thing is, your class is game design, right? So this is someone who's teaching at high school in an English department.
Yeah.
Or is teaching high school English. What do you think he should bring to bear?
I think he should bring in some incredibly accessible, free, browser-based games, you know, that sort of thing, so that, assuming that this is a classroom where the kids have computer access of some kind or mobile phone access, something where you can play something free on a browser. That is an assumption. I realize that.
Yeah.
But with that assumption, there's a lot of stuff that's very accessible to play. There's a couple of like sterling examples that I think are very easy. Something like Anna Anthropy's work you know, especially dysphoria or something. That's something you can look at the themes. You can look at how gameplay itself and how mechanics themselves also can add to a theme or can teach you something through, like, interacting with the systems as opposed to just, oh, this is, like, a visual novel. This is basically literature with pictures, that kind of thing. I think that would be incredibly useful. I mean, of course, this also depends on the sort of emotional maturity of your students. I don't know if these are freshmen or seniors.
Yeah, those are big differences,
which,
for sure.
You know, in which case there are games that are appropriate, I think, for sort of all ages, and I think there are games that are maybe more skewed towards emotional maturity.
Totally.
But, yeah, there's plenty of stuff. I mean, Dysphoria is one good example. There's I don't know if I would give them Curtain because maybe that's a little too heavy, for high school kids. Of course, I'm always thinking of like queer experience stuff. But I think it's a useful perspective, and I think it's useful to look at games that do things through their systems.
But also those simpler games that you're going to – I'm not using simpler as a pejorative on things like issues.
Right.
That it's easier to actually see the connecting tissue between like ideas and implementation that is a little blurrier in – big budget
AAA,
games that
absolutely. Budget,
you know, are in which it's polished behind cutscenes and all sorts of other gloss. Whereas, like a lot of these simpler games, like whether you're talking about Twine games or just very simple video games, like you can just see like from idea to implementation where the connecting dots are along the way. Then I think like those games are like very useful for understanding like how you yourself could break that game down into its core elements and see how that person arrived at those conclusions in a way that is a lot more challenging with, you know, like a Grand Theft Auto 5 or something like that.
Oh, totally.
Absolutely.
There might also be value here in thinking about ways to give them access to gameplay, to like video of gameplay, assigning them like a 1 hour segment or 30 minute segment of a long play to watch to pay attention to the mechanics with like an explainer of what something is, and then ask them about how the mechanics reflect the gameplay. The thing I think about, one of the examples...
Go Far Cry 2.
No, I'm actually not going Far Cry 2.
Okay.
I'm going the other way, which is Battlefield Hardline, which is the example that I give a lot of really dissonant themes, which is like, oh, you can arrest people in that game instead of killing them, but the reward you get for arresting them is more guns, more more fatal guns, more lethal weapons. And like, that's, oh, okay, that's interesting. That's a thing that happens in games that doesn't always, or that happens in all media, where there's like, oh, the style, the grammar of this piece, the cadence of this piece doesn't necessarily match up. It's dissonant with whatever the content or meaning or theme is. And sometimes that's important and valuable, that dissonance, and other times it's not. And I think that there's value in like having them dig into the AAA things because that's where that bad disconnect happens so often.
Absolutely.
Whereas when it is one person making a thing, it's easy to just give them the examples of where it goes good.
Right.
For me, like part of media literacy is seeing things go bad and learning how to criticize those things and learning the language for how what critique looks like separate from taste or on top of taste. And that's so for me, like I would love to find a way to give them that. And the other one that I want to say is like look if there's any way to let them play tabletop stuff.
Yes.
Short tabletop, like 1 hour, 2 hour long things. There's a forum called Story Games. Look on Story Games for little very like mechanics light but still mechanics driven stuff that lets them experience how rules can lead to narrative development. And that to me is like core to what games are, is that story comes from rule sets, which is true in sports, it's true in big budget video games, it's true in small, you know, alt games, and it's true on in the tabletop space. And so like getting them involved in play for me and then asking them to talk about what their play experience would be like would be really high on my list.
And board games are interesting because the rules are actually explicitly written out as opposed to games where you intuit the rule sets a lot of ways. And I remember reading about one of the things they do at GDC, or at least did in the past, was like one of the sort of like developer classes you could take that is separate from what we normally think of GDC with these panels and stuff, is where they take games like a Mass Effect or something like that, and they force you to turn it into a tabletop game. And it's a way of taking like games where rules are fuzzier and actually forcing you to break down like, what is this game doing, what are like the core rules of how this game works, and then translate it to another medium forces you to understand what those mechanics and rule sets are in a way that you aren't necessarily breaking down, and you're doing that just as you're playing the game and not actually thinking about those interactions. But when you have to like apply it and write it down and then create your own rule set from it, it allows you to understand that game in a much more fundamental sense.
I also like that because it forces you to decide what you're prioritizing in your translation.
Right.
Right? Like, the what your Mass Effect game looks like might not be what my Mass Effect game looks like, right. Might not be what your Mass Effect game looks like, right? Like, there are different levels of abstraction happening. There are going to be different focuses in terms of, like, am I representing combat? Am I representing exploration? Am I representing romance?
Which mode do you go for? Yeah.
Right,
do you do the visual novel? Do you do the sort of grid-based combat?
Right,
yeah,
right. There's all sorts of stuff that you could break down there, which is really fascinating. I still really want there to be an XCOM style Mass Effect game that combines all of I want there to be Fire Emblem but Mass Effect.
Yes.
With the romances
that would be really
built
fun.
In. I want like a cool ship with like 50 aliens and like I can combine them in different relationships and have them have support conversations and friendships, and then also XCOM style cover based tactical like RPG action stuff.
That's also rad.
Like with the Mass Effect like system of like shields and armor and barrier and power interactions. Like that's I want all of that, and then also they date.
Yep.
Which is also for me just a problem with XCOM in general. Not a problem with, but a thing that I wanted XCOM to do in XCOM 2 that it didn't really do was like give me even more reason to like my soldiers.
Right.
Give them personalities. Like not just cool names and looks and powers, but like I want them to chatter a little bit more. I want
Instead
them to like,
of,
get to know each other.
Fantasy chess with kissing,
it's sci-fi chess
with kissing.
That's all I'm saying.
Best games.
Get on
Player
there,
experience
UK.
Goals.
So that's all. So yeah, I think that's a good set of things that you
briefly,
can think about.
Briefly.
Yes.
Briefly. Yeah. As for our, you know, we have to have a near minute in all of our
Okay,
podcasts.
Near minute.
Oh, near minute.
Can you at least talk a little bit about
yes.
your experience?
I beat ending A.
Okay.
I got through ending A 2 nights ago.
Yep.
And then I was like, all right, I'm just going to start ending B and then get to the opening, like, save point. Because I know what the opening's going to be, I thought to myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start, like, a route B. And then literally immediately, it was like, oh, there is new stuff happening here, huh?
Yep.
And then after that, there was even more new stuff happening.
Yep.
And I've gotten back to, like, the resistance camp that's,
right.
like, the central hub on the world. But there's already so much different interesting stuff happening. There are really good moments. There's, like, the moment where the settings happen.
Uh-huh.
Do you know the moment I'm talking
uh-huh.
about? That's a really fucking cool moment because of the realization of visibility. That's one thing I'll say.
Yep.
Like, that's really cool. In general, that game's really good. I'm going to try to get through it this week or next week. Like, that's Solaris I've been playing, obviously, but I've been switching out of that with Nier. I'm going to beat Nier and then go on to Persona 5, probably. Mm-hmm. Briefly, also on Persona 5. Persona 5 is out tomorrow.
Ugh, okay.
Yeah.
I think that's tomorrow.
Pretty sure.
Reviews are out. I'm like 20-something hours in, so I'm nowhere near far enough in to be like, oh, here's what I feel about stuff. There are lots of good reviews out there worth going to read, and I will continue to weigh in on that also.
Right.
But there are things I like, there are things I don't like, and more development there in the future. I'm glad that we're out of like big budget releases.
We had a meeting yesterday. It's like, hey, we should look at you know what the calendar is for games coming in April. Like, we didn't have to look at a calendar in the last couple of months because it was just
right.
There was always something happening. And then we looked at April. It was kind of like, oh, like
yeah,
we're getting
there's
we're getting
still real. Stuff.
There's totally stuff
that I like,
but it's not like
the 70 last. Hour
yeah.
massive.
There's everyone's yeah. gonna get a breather for a couple of weeks here.
And I think that's a good chance for us to all find the thing that we want to spend time with.
Yes.
Spend some time with it. I'm really excited to play some smaller games. Like, I want to play something I can beat in 4 hours
right.
really badly.
That'd be cool.
It's nice. We're breath of fresh air. April. Spring is here.
Breath
of the wild fresh air. Also, I want to play more Zelda. The Zelda patch hit. We're going to play more Zelda. Hopefully this week we're going to pick up the permadeath run that
I'm
doing.
Got a lot to do.
For people who don't know, I started a run of Breath of the Wild where my goal is to beat Ganon, to beat that game with three
beat
lives.
Beat that Ganon.
To beat that game. Mm-hmm. Got to beat that. Hashtag beat that Ganon.
Mm-hmm.
That is the hashtag that we're using.
Okay.
Millions of people are watching live at home right now. Shout outs to all of our fans on Twitter begging for us to beat that Ganon. That's not happening.
Hashtag beat the Ganon.
So the goal is that I have three lives, not three hearts. There's a confusion, a little bit of confusion.
It's
I'm not trying to beat,
to
three
beat
hearts.
That game with three hearts.
You could beat it with three hearts, for sure.
Even
right?
with the special thing you got to do in the woods?
You wouldn't do that. Speedrunners aren't
going to do that.
You don't
have to do that at all?
That. No.
Oh, I thought that was necessary to beat
Mm-mm.
the game.
No.
All right.
I don't think so.
Yeah, you could beat the game in like 45 minutes.
Yeah, speedrunners are beating it like with nothing.
Okay,
yeah.
I got you.
But
I
what
was
I'm trying
like
to do
a sequence
is
break or something.
I have three game overs. That's another way of saying
three game
after
overs.
The third game over, that is it. We are done with this. We're going to move on to a new thing. And every week we're also adding a new challenge. I haven't checked the poll recently.
All
I'm a little
right.
worried about. I should take a peek at this and see what the new challenge. So far, I've lost one life. You can spoilers, I guess. So you can go watch this on YouTube.com/waypointvice.
There were a couple of things that went into that lost life. There's a bad non-joke, and there was also somebody didn't heed some particular advice.
Which advice was that?
Which was to maybe be a little careful, because sometimes you can't actually stand on some of the
ledges. Well, you have often given me bad advice. So I was like,
I didn't believe that whippoorwills were real.
Okay, that's not a real bird.
He's a real bird.
And the other thing there was just the other thing that I should have done, actually. So here's what happened, Patrick.
Okay.
I was climbing a mountain.
Uh-huh.
I thought I could stand on a thing. Yeah. I couldn't stand on
and
it, so I lost one of my three lives. I fell. In the Great Plateau. So the thing to note is the thing I should have done is just fast travel to a shrine.
Yep.
Obviously. And I couldn't do that. But one of the options for next week's game that people have been voting on is no fast traveling a way to save my life
I don't think
from
you
a
should
tough
be allowed
fight.
To. That should have been instituted from day one.
Ooh.
No fast travel.
Well, now
travel.
It's going to be instituted probably, I think.
That might
Here,
be winning.
I'll even vote for
Your
it.
Your vote. Okay.
Yeah, I'm
going to
go.
That's my
vote.
Confirmed
vote for
he really just did
I
vote
did
for
it.
That.
Everyone
voted.
Go vote for that.
I don't. It's going to be bad.
Take it away.
Yeah, I'll add a link. There's a story up on the site called Can We Beat Zelda Breath of the Wild with Only Three Lives? Go there. There's a link to the poll that you can check out. Other stuff you can check out always at waypoint.vice.com. Again, if you have questions, you can send them to gaming@vice.com. What else? You can follow me at Austin_Walker. You can follow Danielle.
Danielle R.I.
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
And Patrick.
You can follow me, #BeatTheGannon, over at
That's
Patch Topic.
#BeatTheGannon.
BeatTheGannon.
Beat the Ganon, whichever is in your heart. Go in your one of your three hearts and decide.
Yeah, well, two.
Well, two.
Now.
Yeah, that's not. Shout-outs as always to Dylan Coburn and Tim Barnes for hooking us up with production. Tim Barnes at Tim Barnes 451 on Twitter. Shout-outs to Bowen for letting us use his song Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. You can find out more about that and go buy it at waypoint.zone/BOEN. And hey, here are the games we talked about this week. Stellaris.
Yep.
Nier.
Yep.
Automata. I said it right this time.
Automata.
Automata.
Mm-hmm.
Automata.
That's from Tim.
That's from Tim.
I don't
want to
bite that. That's from Tim Barnes. He did that.
What else did we talk about?
Narcosis.
Narcosis. We're trying to get better at this.
Yeah.
And then, like, Bioshock Infinite and Battlefield Hardline, some other stuff.
Yeah.
You just heard those. Those don't count. Those are not big talking points.
Yes.
XCOM 2, but what if it was also Mass Effect and the aliens?
XCOM 2, but with fucking.
Yeah.
Welcome to Waypoint.
XCOM 2. Yes. SexCOM 2.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hang up.
Shut it down.
Thanks, everybody.
Turn it off.
Catch us on Friday for our 53rd episode. 54th episode. 54. I don't know numbers. I'm all.
Studio 54.
Okay. Have a good week, everybody. Catch you on Wednesday and then Friday. Peace.
Want truly hydrated skin? Meet Osea's Body Care Breakthrough, Hyaluronic Body Serum. It's clinically proven to increase hydration by 161%. It's lightweight, fast-absorbing, and delivers 24 hours of hydration for silky smooth skin without any sticky afterfeel. Treat your skin to clean, vegan skincare from Osea. Get 10% off your first order with code SUMMER at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code SUMMER.